The Christmas Tree Farm by Laurie Gilmore. Read by Regina Regan. Chapter 1. Kara North hated Christmas, which was unfortunate, considering she was currently the proud owner of a Christmas tree farm in a town that was far too cute for its own good, with residents that couldn't seem to take the hint and leave her the hell alone. She breathed out a frustrated sigh as she closed the door on her latest visitor, some guy named George, who dropped off a complimentary sample of Christmas gingerbread cookies from the bakery in town and a business card, and more than a few hints about a plan to do business together. He was the third one this weekend. Yesterday, Deputy Mayor Mindy Walsh had dropped by on behalf of the town council to hand her a flyer for the annual tree lighting next week, as though Kira hadn't seen 500,000 of those every time she went into town for food. And just this morning, an entire family showed up, kids in tow with matching Christmas sweaters, asking if they could cut down a tree. She pretended not to see the children's tears as she turned them away. It was all a bit much. She slid down to the floor, her back against the door, and tore open the red and green cellophane protecting the cookies. She picked a Santa-shaped one and bit off his head. Unfortunately, he was absolutely delicious, all nutmeg and cinnamon. Damn him. The cold seeped through her back as she finished him off, one decadent bite at a time. The door was freezing. The floor was freezing. The entire crappy old house she'd moved into 3 months ago was freezing. She leaned her head back against the door with a soft thud, attempting to pretend that she was fine. It was fine. She would just put on another sweater, even though she was already wearing two. She'd put on a warmer pair of socks. People sometimes wore hats inside, right? The ancient radiator beside the door let out a defeated whine. Right. Time to get up. Time to get up and get back to work, because the quaint farmhouse she'd bought sight unseen was actually a decrepit old farmhouse with a heating system on life support, and the acres of scenic farmland was actually a beloved but totally run-down Christmas tree farm. And even though she'd sworn not to reopen it, now she had to, in order to make some money and fix up this place, seeing as how she'd spent all of hers buying it in the first place. If she wanted to survive the winter and not be found frozen to death by a nosy but well-intentioned neighbor, she needed to get this place up and running, and fast. It was already the Sunday after Thanksgiving, and, judging by the family she'd devastated this morning, people were dying to get their trees up. She grabbed a blanket on her way past the couch and shuffled over to where she'd left her laptop on the ancient wooden dining table the previous owners had left behind. They'd left a lot of junk behind, actually. She kept finding old mail tucked away in odd places, but hadn't bothered opening any of it. The table was nice, though. It fit her farmhouse aesthetic. She flipped open her computer. Still no Wi-Fi. It hadn't worked right since that power outage last week. Damn it. How was she supposed to hire people, set up a website, and create a social media presence for this place without Wi-Fi and with an incredibly unreliable cell signal? In like 2 days. She slumped down in the closest chair and practiced not crying. Her tears would probably freeze on her face if she did. She sniffed them back in and tried not to think about how pitiful she must look right now, wrapped in a worn comforter, packed into way too many layers of clothing, nose red from cold and crying. This wasn't at all how things were supposed to go. First of all, she wasn't supposed to be alone. Her sister should be here with her. Her other half. Her much more competent, reasonable, level-headed half. Her twin and best friend since birth. Chloe never would have bought this place on a whim. Chloe never would have agreed to this sale without a visit and an inspection at the very least. Chloe would have asked questions like, "Why do you want to live on a farm in New England, despite having no idea how to grow things or cook things or really do anything on your own?" Questions that Kira had no desire to answer. Because this whole plan wasn't so much a whim as a last-ditch effort to start over, to get as far away from her old life, her old self, as possible. It wasn't a whim so much as a radical reimagining of who she wanted to be. But Chloe had abandoned her, ran off and got married, and moved to Denmark. Denmark? Of all places. And what was one supposed to do when their soulmate, their other half, finds a new other half? Well, apparently, they absorb too much homesteading social media content, decide they can totally do that, use their trust fund money to buy a farm, and essentially ruin their lives. Okay, so maybe this specific plan was a little bit of a whim. But here she was, miserable and alone, and really freaking cold. Kira wiped her cheeks with the back of her hand. This was ridiculous. She had to do something, or that image of herself, frozen to death in her bed, was about to become reality. She shoved another cookie in her mouth, for strength, grabbed her phone, wrapped her blanket around her more securely, and headed for the back door. She slid on her new boots and stepped outside. It might have been warmer outside than it had been in her house. The sun, however weak this late in November, definitely helped. If she was going to survive this, she was going to have to get used to these northern winters. It hadn't even snowed yet, and she already felt wildly unprepared. The temperature in Georgia rarely dropped below 50 degrees, and certainly not in the middle of the afternoon. Today couldn't be warmer than 30. She was so screwed. No tears. Not right now. Not until later, when she was huddled under her blankets in bed instead of out here in the backyard, where any roaming resident of Dream Harbor could pop up like some kind of jack-in-the-box nightmare of glad tidings. She held up her phone and started wandering through the rows of trees just past her tiny yard. Surely, if she walked far enough, she'd get some kind of signal. She could probably go into town and work at the library or that cafe everyone seemed to love, but that would require being out in public, which she did not feel up to in her current state of mental breakdown. So, wandering the fields in her flannel pajama bottoms, ratty old sweaters, and down comforter, it had to be. The trees stretched in tidy rows ahead of her, ranging in height from her waist to at least a foot or two above her head. Luckily, the trees had just continued being trees, even without an owner, for the past few years. They could use some trimming and shaping, but overall, her crop was in good condition. It was the barn that was nearly falling down, and the house that required significant work. But first, money. And before money, employees and a real-life business, something Kira had never done nor aspired to do in her entire life. But she didn't have time to dwell on that, not before a giant black blur raced across her path with two smaller blurs at its heels. Kira shrieked. The dogs barked. The man, following them, skidded to a stop. "Elizabeth, heel!" His voice was stern and harsh, and the biggest dog loped happily to his side. "Good girl." He patted her head. "Odie, Pudgy, heel." He tried to get the other two dogs' attention with the same stern tone, but it was far too late for that. Kira was already squatting to pet the two little wiggly bodies at her feet. "Look at you, sweet babies," she crooned. "Little angels." The smallest dog, some sort of Westie mix with wiry white hair, pushed its cold snout into her palm, huffing in excitement. The other one, who must have been at least 100 years old in dog years, waited patiently for scratches between its floppy ears, its tongue lolling out of its mouth. "What good doggies you are, so sweet," Kira went on, petting and scratching and so generally delighted to have such precious babies on her property that she'd nearly forgotten the man until he was towering over her. Sorry about that, he said. I thought this place was abandoned. Otherwise, I would have had the dogs on their leashes.
It's okay,
Kira said, still crouched low, but now paying proper attention to Elizabeth, who was starting to whine at not being part of the love fest happening with the other dogs.
Look at you! What a beautiful girl you are, she told her,
and it seemed the larger dog smiled at her. Kira smiled back, for the first time in days. It was nice. Until she finally stood and looked at the man who had brought the puppies to her farm. The smile dropped from her face. He was staring at her with a mix of confusion and horror. It was then that Kira remembered her unwashed hair and her red eyes and her blanket-as-outerwear fashion statement. Ugh. This day, this town, these people, they were everywhere.
Yes, well, actually, I own this farm, she said, standing to her full height. So, you are trespassing.
Elizabeth whined and Kira scratched between her ears.
Not you, sweetheart. You didn't know.
To be fair, I didn't know either, the man said, a slight smirk on his face.
How is that possible? Everyone in this nosy town knows about it.
He shrugged. I don't live in this nosy town. Kira frowned.
Then what are you doing here?
Visiting.
She didn't like his tone, or his face, for that matter. It was too handsome, but in like an obnoxiously conventional way. Too much symmetry, too much perfect dark hair. It was annoying, and entirely uninteresting. Too wholesome.
Well, whoever you're visiting should have told you that I own this land now, so you can't just traipse through here on your little hike or whatever you're doing. The man's obnoxiously straight smile grew. Little hike or whatever?
I don't know. Well, what's with the vest? You look like you're going on a hike.
He looked down at his puffy vest and dark jeans and hiking boots, and then let his gaze wander over Kira's ensemble. You're wearing a blanket, he observed.
Yes.
And you're making fun of my vest?
Yes.
She crossed her arms over her chest, not that he could see that, since they were tucked under her blanket, but still. Her stance was defiant. She was pretty sure that came across. She didn't like this guy and his teasing smile, and his light eyes with dark lashes.
Really? Ugh, could he be more basic?
Kira only went for men that had bad idea tattooed across their forehead, sometimes literally, and this guy looked like the model for the guy your mother wants you to bring home from the holidays to sip cocoa under the tree in her matching pajamas. Highly undesirable. Downright unattractive in every way, really. Except for maybe the way his thighs were filling out those jeans. But that was neither here nor there. Sorry again for the misunderstanding. We'll get going. Oh, right. He was going to take the dogs with him. Shoot, she liked the dogs. She looked down at the three precious faces in front of her, and she could swear she could hear their thoughts.
You might as well finish your walk, she blurted out, ignoring how his dark eyebrows rose in surprise. I mean, you're here now, and the dogs need their exercise, and I would never deprive them of that.
You're a big dog person, I take it.
They're better than people in every way.
His laugh was low and deep, and did absolutely nothing for her.
I agree.
She gave him a curt nod, expecting him to go on his way, but he was still looking at her, like he was working on a puzzle.
What? She snapped.
Are you okay?
Was she okay? How dare he? How dare he presume just because she was wandering around outside wearing bedding and waving her phone in the air like she thought it worked via witchcraft that she wasn't okay?
She smoothed her blanket down with a hand as though it were an evening gown.
I'm fine, thank you.
A small crease of worry formed between his obnoxiously perfect eyebrows, and Kira wanted to throw something at him and see if she could hit it. It's just, you're walking around with your phone over your head. I thought maybe you were having trouble with it. I work in tech, so I thought,
a tech bro. Oh, just what she needed. always trust your first instincts, and her first instincts were right. She didn't need some Silicon Valley, let's go for a hike wherever we damn well please because we think we own the whole world, Clark Kent lookalike to rescue her. Not today, buddy. No thanks, Elon. I'm managing just fine. Elon? Now he looked highly offended. That did something for her. Wow, I was just trying to help. No one asked you to. He held up his hands. Sorry, you're right. I'll get out of your hair. Thank you. She didn't look at him as she said it. The hurt expression on his face had taken some of the fun out of the whole thing. Instead, she crouched one more time to say goodbye to her new friends. Bye, sweet babies. Enjoy your walk. She gave them enough pets to last for a while, and by the time she was standing again, the mystery man had already turned and was walking down the row of trees, whistling for his dogs to follow. And unfortunately, they did. Chapter 2. You can stay and sit with me for a few minutes, can't you? His sister asked, already pulling out a chair at the closest table and gesturing to the one across from it. While it's quiet in here, I need a break anyway. Bennett glanced around the temporarily empty pumpkin spice cafe and then back at his sister Jeannie. She flashed him her sweetest smile. Please? I do actually have work to do while I'm here, you know, he grumbled, but sat down anyway. He was visiting Dream Harbor for a month, living in his sister's apartment above the shop, while she got settled at her new fiancé's house, and he was staying to celebrate the holidays. But he did have to work. He'd set things up to work remotely for the next few weeks, which plenty of his other co-workers already did regularly, but Jeannie seemed to think he was on an extended vacation. Just for a few minutes. Jeez, do they not give you coffee breaks at this job of yours? They do, but it's the week after Thanksgiving. I have a lot to catch up on. Right, computery work to do. He nearly opened his mouth to explain to his sister for the umpteenth time that he was a software engineer and that he wrote code for multiple online retailers, but he'd given up on that years ago. Probably around the time when she started telling people he was some kind of personal online shopper, for lack of a better explanation. Computery work was close enough. So, what did you do yesterday? Jeannie asked, in between sips of her coffee. Her new engagement ring glinted at him from one hand wrapped around her mug. Logan had proposed to her just before Thanksgiving, and Bennett had had to endure the two of them making heart eyes at each other for the entire 7-hour drive back here from Buffalo, where they'd all spent Thanksgiving with their parents. He'd been very thankful to have his own space when they arrived in Dream Harbor, and to have a break from the lovebirds. Logan was a good guy, and Bennett was happy for them, but the ring was another little reminder of how epically bad his dating life had been lately. He couldn't imagine going on a second date with most women he'd met, let alone commit to a lifetime together. Was long-term commitment a thing people even did anymore? I slept in, took the dogs for a walk. He shrugged. Nothing much. Where'd you take the dogs? The old Christmas tree farm up on Spruce. Jeannie's eyes widened. Oh. Yeah, would have been nice if you'd mentioned the new owner. Sorry, I forgot all about it. Bennett leaned back in his chair, remembering the woman he'd met in the fields yesterday. The woman who'd simultaneously greeted his dogs with such warmth and affection, and frozen him out completely. Who looked like maybe she was in the middle of some kind of crisis, but held herself like she was better than him. Who, when he offered to help, had made fun of him instead. Yeah, he wasn't a big fan of the new Christmas tree farm owner, despite how cute she'd looked all wrapped up in that blanket, and how bright her smile had been when she was petting his dogs. Ben knew plenty of cute women, and cute wasn't worth the trouble. In fact, all cute had gotten him in the past few months was roped into helping a woman he just met move out of her ex's apartment while the ex begged for forgiveness from the front porch. A second date with someone he met on a dating app that consisted of a quick drink and then her asking for a ride to the airport, which he gave her because what else was he supposed to do, and three separate women who all disliked dogs, one of whom seemed to have a strong dislike for animals in general. He'd seen her scowl at a bird. The last thing he needed was another cute woman. He was done with cute women.
"Did you run into Kira?"
Jeannie asked, a guilty grimace on her face. Bennett shook off the grim thoughts floating through his head and refocused on Jeannie. "If Kira is the hostel new owner, then yes, I met Kira."
"She's..."
Jeannie paused, tapping her lip as she searched for a kinder word to describe Kira. She didn't find one.
"Yeah, she's sort of hostile, but I think she's probably got a soft spot somewhere. We just have to find it."
"I don't have to find anything. I have to get back to work," he said, rising from his seat. Besides, he already knew what Kira, the hostile Christmas tree farm owner's soft spot, was. He'd heard her croon sweet words to his dogs, her dark eyes lighting up at the sight of them. If the residents of Dream Harbor wanted to get on her good side, he imagined all they'd have to do is head up there with a basket of puppies, and Kira would be putty in their hands. But he had about 0% interest in getting involved in town drama, of which he already knew too much, thanks to Jeannie, and even less interest in having Kira in his hands. Jeannie frowned.
"You work too much."
"Ha," Bennett scoffed, "says the woman who runs her own successful business and is here all the time, which I'm very proud of you for, by the way."
"Thanks, Ben."
Jeannie waved away his praise as she stood.
"Oh, I have a great idea."
Her eyes lit up in a way Bennett found to be incredibly ominous.
"You should come to the town meeting tonight."
"I'm going to pass on local politics, but thanks anyway."
"No, it's fun. It's a whole thing, and you can meet my friends, and then we can all go out for drinks after. Please, Ben."
"Don't look at me like that, Jean Marie."
"Like what?"
Bennett sighed. He'd never been very good at saying no, hence the moving services and airport rides he'd provided lately. But his sister made it particularly hard. "With those big eyes, you know exactly what you're doing."
"It'll be fun, I promise. And besides, aren't you here to spend time with me? The loving sister you abandoned to live all the way on the other side of the country?"
Excuse me, you left Buffalo before I did." His sister still didn't know the real reason he'd moved out to San Francisco after college, and he had no plans to fill her in. Jeannie blinked.
"Oh, right, I forgot. Whatever, just come, okay? It starts at 7.
She brushed a quick kiss to his cheek before hurrying back behind the counter, just as a group of retired folks in workout gear ambled in through the door.
"How was your walk today? Chilly out there."
He heard his sister chatting happily to her customers as he slipped away and up the back staircase to the apartment. He was greeted by three wagging tails and a pile of work to do. And, apparently, tonight he was attending the town meeting. This wasn't even close to a vacation, despite what his sister believed. Bennett didn't know what to expect from a Dream Harbor town meeting, but the raucous laughter and raised voices he encountered when he walked through the doors were certainly not it. He squeezed past a group arguing about the appropriate time to start listening to Christmas music, nearly got knocked out by a woman in a power suit carrying a giant metal menorah, and was about ready to turn around and leave when he was grabbed by the arm and pulled into a row of chairs.
"Bennett, you're here."
A face he'd only ever seen from the screen of his phone beamed at him. Jacob, from his sister's book club, pulled him in for a hug.
"Hey, man. Yeah, I'm here."
Here in this bizarre town, feeling more and more like he'd gone down some kind of rabbit hole and landed in another world entirely. And he thought San Francisco was quirky.
"Good to see you."
Jacob pulled away, but was still holding tight to his arms.
"I can't believe Jeannie roped you into coming to one of these. Are you coming out for drinks after?"
Yeah, apparently."
"Great."
Jacob gave him one last squeeze before letting go. Bennett glanced around at the still buzzing crowd, although people were starting to find seats now, not that their volume had decreased at all.
"Are these things always so
crazy?"
"Yeah, but they're usually good for a laugh. Ben nodded, distracted by the woman in the suit struggling to run a cord long enough to plug in the giant menorah. Maybe he should go help her?
That's the deputy mayor, Jacob said, following Ben's gaze. She's probably testing that old thing out for the tree lighting festival next weekend.
There you are. Jeannie came up behind him before he could untangle himself from Jacob long enough to go help with the menorah.
Here I am.
Sorry we're late, she said, unwinding a giant scarf from around her neck. Logan stood behind her like he was being marched to his death.
Hey, Logan.
Bennett.
His sister's fiancé gave him a nod and a small, pained smile before he shuffled into the row and took a seat.
And this is Hazel and Noah, Jeannie was saying, pointing to the two other humans, trying to cram into the already crowded row.
Hey, nice to meet you. Noah stuck out a hand and Bennett shook it around Jeannie's shoulder. Noah grinned.
First town meeting, huh? You're gonna love it.
Bennett was starting to highly doubt that.
The small, curly-haired woman next to Noah must be Hazel, whom his sister talked about all the time. She gave him a little wave as she sat in between Noah and Jeannie. Bennett took the only open seat between Jeannie and Jacob. Logan had managed to scoot his way all the way down the row and was currently reading a book as he leaned against the wall, clearly blocking out the chaos around him.
If everyone could settle down, we'll get started.
A man with glasses and a hideous Christmas tie was trying to get everyone's attention from behind the podium.
That's the mayor, who also happens to be Hazel's dad, Jeannie narrated for him.
Oh, and here's Annie.
A tall, blonde woman swept into the row ahead of them.
What'd I miss? She asked, turning to face Jeannie as soon as she was seated.
Nothing yet. Oh, but this is my brother, Bennett.
Nice to meet you, he said, sticking out his hand, but Annie ignored it.
Ben, hi. I've heard so much about you.
Her gaze flicked from Jeannie to Ben and back again.
Jeannie, you didn't tell me your brother was like a hot male version of you.
I don't normally think of him as hot, actually. Annie's eyes were on him again. She was objectively beautiful and definitely trouble, but it didn't matter anyway, because her gaze had already wandered and landed somewhere past his right shoulder. Bennett turned just in time to see a dark-haired man wiggle his fingers in a wave at Annie. When Bennett turned back around, she was glaring daggers at the man.
He's here again. I thought he'd stopped coming to these.
That's Mac, Jeannie whispered for his sake, even though Annie could obviously still hear her. Annie's arch nemesis. We're all waiting for them to finally sleep together and put us out of our collective misery. Annie huffed. How dare you?
Jeannie just laughed and shrugged. Ben knew when it was best to stay quiet. And now, when he had absolutely no idea what the hell was going on, seemed like a good time.
Attention, everyone!
The mayor tried again, but was cut off by a shrill whistle. The crowd flinched.
Thank you, Mindy,
the mayor said, and the power-suited menorah-wrangling lady gave him a serious nod before taking her seat in the front row.
We have a lot to discuss this evening. With the tree lighting rapidly approaching, the children's pageant in just 2 weeks, and the toy drive that began yesterday, so let's get started.
The rest of the meeting went by in a blur of logistics, volunteering, arguing, and a very odd vote about whether or not Die Hard was a Christmas movie. Bennett tried to keep up, but following along proved to be impossible. Instead, he found himself scanning the room, trying to match faces with stories Jeannie had told him over the past year. He spotted the book club pretty easily, since he'd seen and heard them in the background of his phone calls with Jeannie. They'd even left a copy of their latest read on his doorstep as a welcome gift, and a hint that they wanted him to attend their December meeting. He'd taken one look at Daddy December and was already thinking up ways to be busy that day. The last thing he needed was to read about sex when he hadn't had any in months. He needed something about monks or meditation or suffering or something like that, not Santa smut. And why did thoughts of sexy books bring his thoughts back around to that Christmas tree farm owner? She was so rude to him. Not sexy mean, just
plain mean. And, well, sure, he'd been trespassing, but he hadn't known he was, and he did offer to help with whatever computer issue she was clearly having, and she'd just shut him down completely. It was, well, it had gotten under his skin for sure. Like a splinter. A splinter he couldn't seem to stop picking at. What was her deal? Why had she been out there all alone? Why had she been wearing a blanket instead of a proper coat? Was she cold? Did she want someone to keep her warm? Nope. Bad. Not going down that road with this strange woman. He knew nothing about her, and he was not going to let his overdeveloped need to fix things get in the way of his holiday. He didn't even live here. Kira North was nothing but a quirky character to add to what he knew about Dream Harbor. Nothing else. He would absolutely stop thinking about warming her up. The room had gone quiet around him. He may have let his mind wander a bit too far, because at some point the meeting had taken a turn, and now he found himself the center of attention.
I was just mentioning that you met Kira yesterday, Jeannie said with a smile that chilled him to the bone.
If he'd been 8 and she'd been 10, he'd have flushed her Barbie's head in the toilet all over again.
Wonderful, the mayor was saying, oblivious to Bennett's revenge fantasy. We could really use a neutral party to go up there and check on her.
Neutral party? He echoed. Wait, check on her?
The town has been trying to welcome Miss North, the mayor went on, but she's been resistant to our efforts. But you, now you're just passing through. You're neutral. She wouldn't question your motives.
Well, that certainly wasn't true. And why does she need to be checked on, exactly?
Well, the mayor's face flushed. Just in case there are any dead bodies up there, someone offered from the back of the meeting hall.
Dead bodies? What the actual hell was going on? Jeannie grimaced beside him.
It's not as bad as it seems, she whispered.
We have no proof that there's a dead body, the mayor said.
We also don't have proof that there isn't, Noah piped up helpfully, earning him a smack on the thigh from Hazel. He just laughed and kissed her cheek.
Alex tells it best. Where are they?
The mayor searched the crowd until a person with lavender hair stood up.
Hey, everyone. They gave a little wave before launching into their story. So the Connors owned that farm for generations, and when the youngest child, Edwin, took over sometime in the 80s, he opened it up for families to come and cut down their Christmas trees. It grew from there into the business a lot of you were familiar with for years. Edwin and his wife Ellen never had kids, but they ran the farm for about 40 years together. Well, Edwin was rather eccentric and rather unpredictable.
Scary, you mean? Someone shouted from the audience. Gave me the creeps for sure. Me too.
Anyway, Alex went on, clearing their throat. After his wife died, people saw less and less of Edwin, and the tree farm took a downward turn. When he died a few years later, a letter was found in the house.
This is the good part, Noah whispered, loud enough for everyone to hear. Alex smiled at him.
Right. So the letter claimed that he had buried something important, something precious to him on the farm, but it didn't say what or where. Plenty of us have wanted to search up there, but the land was left to some cousin who was pretty adamant about not letting us snoop around. Highly suspicious, if you ask me.
Alex shrugged.
So, the legend is left unfinished.
Bennett shook his head. And you all think the thing he buried was a body?
His murdered wife, specifically. Jacob filled in for him.
What? She just disappeared one day. I think he buried her for sure.
No way. I still think it's something else, some kind of treasure, Noah argued.
Treasure! Keep dreaming, sailor boy!
An old man yelled from a few rows ahead of them, making Noah chuckle.
It could be money, though. He didn't have any family left. Maybe he hid all his cash instead of putting it in the bank, Kaori suggested.
A bit of a crazy theory.
Crazier than a murdered wife and a dead body, please. I think. But what about...
Wait a minute!
Bennett raised his voice over the cacophony of theories.
Everyone shut up, in surprise. What the hell does any of this have to do with Kira? He heard a snort from the end of the row.
You don't want to know, Logan muttered.
We wouldn't want our newest resident to experience the trauma of accidentally stumbling upon a horrific scene, the mayor explained, like this was all very normal. So we just thought...
You thought I could stumble over it instead? Bennett said, an eyebrow raised. The mayor winced.
We just thought you could pay her a visit or two and help smooth things over. She's reopening the farm and we're so pleased. We just don't want any surprises.
He wrung his hands in front of him.
And she won't let any of the rest of us pass the front porch.
The mayor's face lit up.
But you were able to get right in there. Jeannie told us. You walked your dogs through the fields and chatted with her, so it seems you're the perfect candidate for the job.
Bennett pinched the bridge of his nose and fantasized about researching flight information for the first plane back to San Francisco. I can't. I have to work. The mayor, and every face that turned toward him, looked highly skeptical of this. Remote work is still work.
But it's flexible, right? Jeannie said. Like, you could just pop up there a few times before the farm reopens, just to make sure there's no, like, skulls lying around or anything.
Bennett looked at her and tried to convey just how much he wanted to bury her body right now, but she was completely serious about this. And when he looked around the room, so was everyone else. The entire town was recruiting him to go to their beloved Christmas tree farm and what? Scan for dead bodies? Find a secret stash of money? Solve the town mystery? And the hilarious part was, they thought Kira was actually going to let him in. Ha! The joke was on them. Judging by the way she'd looked at him yesterday, there was no way she was inviting him for afternoon tea and murder mystery solving anytime soon. But everyone was staring at him like they needed him to do this. And Bennett hated saying no, even to crazy villagers he barely knew.
I can try, but wonderful, the mayor said, already moving on. So, Bennett will help with the Christmas tree farm opening. Okay, what's next?
I can try, but it will never work, was what he'd been going to say. Not that it mattered. He'd been steamrolled, and now, instead of a ride to the airport, he was apparently opening a Christmas tree farm, or working on a cold case, or treasure hunting. But most likely, just getting kicked out on his ass by the latest scary Christmas tree farm owner.
Chapter 3. There were dogs outside. Kira could hear them barking as she rinsed her coffee mug and peered out the window over the sink. The one that let in so much cold air, she could feel it on her face as she washed the dishes, but she didn't know what to do about that. Another bark. She wiped the condensation from the window, but she still couldn't see anything. Maybe she had customers. Customers with dogs. Maybe they'd dress the dogs in little dog sweaters for a Christmas photo shoot. That would be adorable. And it would look great on the new social media account she'd finally managed to set up when she'd got a weak signal in the far corner of one of the upstairs guest rooms. As long as she stayed perfectly still and faced the wall, the internet worked perfectly. She should get outside to greet them, even though she'd hired a lovely and very responsible-looking woman to sit in the booth and work the register. But if these were her first customers ever, she should go out and see, and get their permission to post pics of their holiday sweater-wearing dogs. That was why she was scrabbling for her boots and pulling on her new puffy coat so fast. Customers meant money, and money meant heat and new windows. See? Everything was going to be fine. She was going to pull this off all on her own. She didn't need Chloe. If she was being honest, Chloe had probably been holding her back all these years with her practicality and realistic expectations. It was time for Kira to go big, to live her dream, regardless of how recently this dream had popped up. She was going to make money off this Christmas tree-obsessed town, and then she could live off the land, just like At the Homestead Goddess and At Self-Sustained Living and all the other lovely and beautiful accounts she followed.
If they could do it, surely she could do it. Kara hurried out the back door, fantasizing about pickled vegetables lined up in neat rows in her pantry and cross-stitched aprons, not that she knew how to pickle anything or what the hell cross-stitch involved. She followed the sound of the barking dogs through the lines of trees, up two rows, across three. There. Oh. You. The man from the other day had his head down, as though he was looking for something in the dirt. But it snapped up when he heard her voice. "Hello again," he said, a hand raised in greeting. "Why are you back?" Kira's dreams of Christmas doggy photo shoots fizzled out. Elizabeth, the biggest of the three dogs, nudged against her hand. Kira gave her a good scratch. These dogs weren't wearing sweaters, but they were still pretty darn cute. The sign said open. Kira frowned. "And you're here to buy a tree?" The man smiled. "I'm considering it. If I can find the right one." "The right one," she huffed. "It's just a tree, not a wife." His laugh startled her and the dogs. Odie barked in alarm. "I have very high standards for my Christmas trees," he said, his eyes sparkling in amusement. "I bet you do." He probably had obnoxiously high standards for a lot of things. But if Kira liked that sort of thing, she would have stuck around at home for longer. "You don't?" he asked. "Not about Christmas trees, no." She glanced around at the farm she now owned, but, luckily for him, refrained from commenting about how she should probably care about the quality of her Christmas trees. Instead, he shrugged and said, "I like your coat." "Thank you. It's so damn cold here, I had to upgrade." He chuckled. "It hasn't even dropped below freezing yet." "This guy, ugh. Well, it's cold to me. Where are you from, Alaska or something?" "Buffalo." "Hmm. Well, that's nice for you that the cold doesn't bother you, but it bothers me." "Where are you from?" Kira sighed. She didn't love telling people she was from Georgia, especially people from up north. They made instant assumptions that she didn't appreciate, assumptions that she was dumb or slow or worse. It was why she'd made a concerted effort to ditch her accent when she'd moved. It only slipped out now when she was angry or drunk or speaking to her sister. "Georgia." The man just nodded. "No wonder you're cold." No rude comments. Interesting. "I don't know your name," she said. If this guy was going to keep hanging around, she'd probably need to know what to call him. He smiled and stuck out his hand. "Sorry, I'm Bennett." Kara took it in hers and shook it. It was big and warm. "Kara, I know."
"You know?"
"Sure, you're big news in town. I'm staying above my sister's cafe, and you're all anyone talks about."
Odie and Pudgy whined at her feet, and she squatted down to pet them.
"Well, you say that, but where is everyone? I'm open, and I haven't had a single customer."
"Does anyone know you're open?"
Kira huffed. "The sign says open, doesn't it? And we have a brand new website with all the information and an Instagram profile. Oh, actually, can I post a pic of your dogs? So far, I just have random tree pictures."
She peered up at where he still stood above her. "I don't think anyone is checking for a new website. And I think you did a good enough job telling people to, stay out, that no one's driving by to check for an open sign."
"Oh, good point."
Now what? How was she going to lure everyone back? Her dreams of perfectly preserved vegetables were quickly fading.
"Why don't you go to that tree lighting thing? It sounds like a big deal to the town. You could make some kind of announcement about your grand reopening."
She wanted to tell him she didn't need his suggestions, thank you very much. But that was actually a really good idea, damn it. She stood.
"Yeah, maybe."
He smiled that stupid straight smile. His parents must have paid so much for that smile. Nobody was born with teeth that straight. Well, nobody was born with teeth in general, but that was beside the point. She was getting sidetracked.
"Well, I'll leave you to your perfect tree hunt," she said. "If you find one you like, Iris at the booth has saws for cutting it down."
"You have a person sitting in that old shack out front?" His eyes widened in alarm.
"Of course I do. It's fine."
"Fine. I don't know about that. Looks pretty run down."
Kira put her hand on her hip, fully intending to give this know-it-all asshole a piece of her mind, when an image of poor sweet Iris, buried under a pile of old wood beams, flashed through her mind. Oh, God, what if this know-it-all asshole was right? She turned and ran, the dogs hot on her heels. Well, Elizabeth and Odie were. Poor chubby Pudgy was pulling up the rear.
Iris! Iris! She called, racing toward the little cabin on the other side of the farm. Iris, you're in danger!
Kira had thought it was rustic. She thought it had charm. She thought it looked very cute and postable when she'd strung twinkle lights up along the roof. She had not once thought it might fall down and kill her only employee.
I don't think it's that imminent,
Bennett yelled to her as he followed behind the dogs. Imminent or not, Kira couldn't risk it. Mostly because she couldn't bear the thought of Iris getting hurt, but also because she didn't have insurance yet and definitely couldn't afford anyone's medical bills.
Iris, get out of there!
She skidded to a stop in front of the booth. A wide-eyed Iris pulled aside the little window and peered out. What's going on? Iris asked, taking in Kira, red-faced and panting. The three barking dogs, and Bennett, striding in last, but no less harried than the rest of them.
Get out of that death trap!
Death trap? Iris's brows furrowed. Everyone just calm down, Bennett said. I don't think it's that serious.
Not that serious?
Kira spun toward him.
Not that serious? Then why did you say it? Why did you waltz in here and start spouting helpful little tidbits like maybe that booth is a death trap?
I never said death trap.
Arg!
Kira was out of intelligible words. This guy, why was he even here? How about I just go in and check it out for you? How about you go the hell back to Buffalo? His eyes widened at her outburst, and the southern accent that was now bursting through her defenses, and she was suddenly very thankful she didn't have any other customers right now. That would be awkward. She took a deep breath.
Why would you be qualified to check it out? She asked through clenched teeth, instead of yelling at him that possessing testicles did not make him a handyman. You had to have actual skills for that sort of thing. You had to know what you were doing.
Not that she did either, but still. My dad's a contractor. I have some experience. Kira let out a noise somewhere between a groan and a shriek.
Of course you do.
Fine. Go look. She gestured toward the little cabin, and noticed Iris still staring at them. Right. She was having an interesting first day of work.
Iris, why don't you go grab a cup of coffee and take a short break? I just made some in the house.
Iris's gaze flicked from Kira to Bennett, a bemused smirk on her face.
Okay, sure.
She came out of the cabin and gave Kira a knowing smile.
I'll take a break. Try not to kill this guy while I'm gone.
Did Iris just wink at her? What on earth did she think was going on here? Kira didn't have time to set her straight before Iris hurried away down the drive to the house. Bennett, meanwhile, was sniffing around the perimeter of the shack and then peering up at the roof before finally heading through the door. Kira followed him in. There wasn't much inside, but she'd thoroughly cleaned it all on her own. She'd even relocated the family of possums that had taken up residence inside. And by relocate, she meant she'd screamed when she saw them and they had voluntarily left. But the wood floors were scrubbed clean, there was a cozy space heater in the corner, and a small table and two chairs. She'd lined up the saws on hooks on the wall, and had even made a giant carafe of hot chocolate for all the customers she'd imagined having today. Clearly, that wasn't going exactly as planned. She glanced at Bennett, who was examining the small space with a furrow between his brows.
It's better in here than I thought.
She wanted to punch him. Unfortunately, manners were still a big deal in the South, so she refrained.
Thanks.
He knocked on a few walls and reached up to poke at the ceiling.
Looks okay.
Kira ground her back teeth together.
Wonderful.
He turned to face her, and suddenly the fact that they were crammed into a tiny space together was very evident. He was taller than she'd first realized. For whatever reason, that made her angry, too. Like, just be average, would you?
Ugh.
I'm sorry for worrying you like that, he said. I was only trying to help.
So, is that your thing? She snapped. You get off on helping people?
He blinked.
I wouldn't say I get off on it.
You know what I mean. You like to fix things. You're a fixer.
His frown deepened. Maybe I am.
Kira scoffed. How predictable. This big Boy Scout liked to fix things. Well, she didn't need that kind of energy in her life right now. This was her big endeavor. She didn't need this guy waltzing in and trying to take over with all his ideas and concerns, however valid they might be.
And you? He asked. What gets you off?
What? She sputtered, her face immediately heating. He chuckled, low and deep.
You know what I mean. What's your deal? You're bad at letting people help you?
Why was it so crowded in here? Had he stepped closer or had she? For the first time in days, she was warm.
Actually, she said, straightening to her full height, refusing to crane her neck to look up at him.
My whole life, all people did was help me. I rarely did anything for myself ever. I didn't need to. We had people for that, she sniffed. But this is different. This is for me.
Accepting help is different than letting other people do everything for you.
He was definitely closer, his light gray eyes locked on hers. This new coat was too warm.
Kira cleared her throat.
Yes, well, I think you've done enough helping for one day.
Chapter 4. He was standing dangerously close to Kira. Dangerous, because she looked like she might strangle him. Dangerous, because he had the sudden urge to pull her closer. Which was insane. You wouldn't try to snuggle with a feral cat, and tugging Kira into his arms right now would amount to the same thing. Her cheeks had turned pinker the angrier she got with him, and at this point were downright rosy. She blew out a breath, fluttering the bangs away from her forehead. He hadn't had a chance to notice just how beautiful she was the other day, when she was clearly upset and wrapped in an old blanket. But today, he was noticing. But he should stop noticing, because noticing would do absolutely no good. Not only was she incredibly not interested in him noticing, but he had very specifically sworn off beautiful women, not to mention he was only here temporarily. There were endless reasons why he should step back, why he should stop holding her fiery gaze, why he should walk right the hell out of here. But Kira was right. He got off on fixing things. He should have kept his mouth shut about this tree farm shack, about lots of things he'd said to Kira since he met her. Except now, looking at her bundled into her new coat with its faux fur-trimmed hood, like she was ready for an Arctic expedition, he found himself opening his mouth again.
How's the main house?
She narrowed her eyes at him, like he had nefarious motives for asking.
It's fine.
You sure? Her internal struggle on how to answer was written clearly across her face. She didn't want to ask him for help, obviously. But that house was at least 100 years old and had been vacant for the past 3, according to Logan. There was no way things were running perfectly in there. Not that it was any of his business if they were or not. He could just leave. He could tell his sister and her crazy neighbors that he'd found nothing, that he wasn't going back, that he had work to do. He could walk away and leave Kira here with her new farm and her wide eyes and her lack of customers. But what he wouldn't be able to do was stop thinking about how she might be unsafe in that house. The town was worried about her encountering some mythical dead body, but what they should be worried about was carbon monoxide poisoning, or a gas leak, or faulty wiring. So, yeah, he wanted to fix a few things for her, if she let him. Was that so wrong?
Kira blew out a long, dramatic sigh.
I guess if you really wanted to, you could maybe look at the boiler for me. I don't seem to be getting much heat. So, I mean, if it would be fun for you, I'll check it out. She might have been rolling her eyes at him, but he'd already turned around and walked out of the cabin. His dogs were waiting for him. Pudgy had dozed off under a tree. Odie immediately started yapping at the sight of him,
and Elizabeth loped loyally to his side. "Come on," he said, and Elizabeth and Odie followed, the big dog at his hip and the little one scurrying around his feet. He turned around to see Kira scooping Pudgy up and carrying her in her arms. She whispered something in the old dog's ear. He decided it was best to ignore what seeing her snuggle his favorite dog did to him, turning his insides soft and achy. It was just the sort of thing to have him renovating her entire house by the end of the week. He shook his head and trudged toward the main house. He was just going to make sure it was livable, and then he really would stay away from this farm and this woman who wasn't even remotely interested in him and he didn't need in his life anyway, regardless of how his dogs felt about her. They also ate trash, so they didn't exactly have discerning tastes. The house was an old Victorian with a big wraparound porch. It looked like a dilapidated version of a doll's house Jeannie used to have when they were kids. He climbed the front steps, promising himself that he was just being neighborly. He would have insisted on helping, even if Kira had been an old man, or a nun, or anyone, really. Although maybe he wouldn't have been quite so eager about it. "Stay," he told the dogs, but Kira huffed behind him. "They can come in." She cuddled Pudgy closer. "We can't just leave these poor babies outside," she crooned. "Right, of course." He opened the door, and Elizabeth and Odie raced inside. Kira laughed, and he added the throaty sound of it to the things he was ignoring. The temperature in the house wasn't much better than outside. No wonder this woman had taken to wearing comforters. "Kira, it's freezing in here." She put Pudgy gently on the sofa and tucked a fleece blanket around her. He would swear the dog grinned at him.
"I know. That's what I said."
"No, you didn't. You said you weren't getting much heat. I don't think you're getting any." She shrugged.
"Semantics.
Kira,
what?
You can't live like this." Her mouth set in a firm line. He was about to get kicked out in his ass if he didn't scale down the protective vibe.
"I can, and I do, and I'm fine." She spun on her heel and marched off toward what he assumed was the kitchen in the back of the house.
"The boiler's in the basement, if you want to look at it." She gestured to a door under the main staircase. "Otherwise, you can feel free to get the hell out." She didn't look back, just left him, standing in her entryway hall, feeling like an asshole for wanting to help her. He should go, clearly. He had things to do other than be abused by irrationally angry Christmas tree farm owners, things like his actual job. But it really was freezing in here, and he said he would take a look, and damn it, he couldn't just leave her here like this. The radiator in the hall clanged like someone was hammering the pipes and then hissed like an angry cat. He took that as a sign. He would just take a quick look. Besides, his dogs were gone. Elizabeth and Odie had totally abandoned him to follow Kira, and Pudgy snored loudly from the couch.
Might as well take a look.
He found Kira an hour later in the kitchen, nursing a cup of coffee, with all three dogs curled up at her feet. He ignored this cozy picture of domestic bliss and instead launched into his findings.
"You need a new boiler."
Kira raised a perfectly groomed eyebrow. "No kidding." Bennett sighed and ran a hand down his face in frustration. Why was she making this so difficult? "Nothing is leaking at the moment, so I think the only real danger is if the pipes freeze. You're getting a little heat coming through, but I don't know if it's enough to keep water flowing." Kira's brow furrowed.
"Okay, thank you."
No snarky comment.
"Okay, so you'll get a new boiler?"
"As soon as I have money for a new boiler, I will get one." He swallowed the urge to offer to pay for a new boiler. That would be too much, even for him. But still, he hated the idea of Kira cold and alone in this house. "Maybe, in the meantime, you could have someone come out and get the fireplace operational. You could heat at least some of the house with that, until you get the boiler."
"Why do you care?"
She placed her mug down on the table and leaned back in her chair to study him. She was wearing at least two bulky sweaters and fingerless gloves, inside. She was cold, and he hated it. He shifted on his feet.
"You said it. I'm a fixer."
Well,
I'm not a damsel in distress. I never said you were. She quirked an eyebrow.
So you do this with everyone, this helpful Boy Scout thing?
I was never a Boy Scout. Her lips pulled up in the corner and almost smile.
Well, thank you. Thank you for checking the boiler and for the suggestion about the fireplace.
Of course.
There's fresh coffee if you want some.
He should get back to work, but he'd already missed the whole morning. Passing on coffee at this point seemed silly, especially if Kira was actually offering it to him instead of biting his head off.
Sure. Thanks.
Kira gestured to the coffee maker.
Help yourself. The mugs are in that cabinet.
The house might be old, but Kira's small appliances were top of the line, and her mugs were all matching earthy tones, lined up with their handles pointed in the same direction. He had to admit it was all visually appealing, and it made him wonder about her even more.
How did you end up here?